Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today we're joined by Peter Schiff. Peter's the president of Euro-Pacific Capital, author of the very thought-provoking book, Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. Peter, we welcome you to our show.
Thanks for having me.
What does Euro-Pacific Capital do?
We're a brokerage firm, and what we have been doing for almost the last decade now is really helping American investors, individual investors, understand the dynamics regarding the fundamental flaws in the American economy, and understanding that, helping them to reallocate their assets towards global investments out of the U.S. dollar, out of U.S. Equities, and out of U.S. bonds into a more diversified foreign portfolio of, you know, rather conservative, yield-oriented investments where the earnings and therefore the dividends are paid to us in other currencies, such as the euro and the Australian dollar, the Singapore dollar, the Swiss franc, the Norwegian krona, the Canadian dollar, just a basket of other currencies that have been gaining value over the years against the dollar, and that I believe will gain substantial value against the dollar in the years ahead.
On page 92 of your book, I'm going to just read a couple of sentences, and then we'll go from there. By buying our bonds, foreign investors have helped lower interest rates, causing our housing sales to rise, and giving impetus to our rampant consumption. A lot of that money went into mortgage-backed securities or other forms of real estate financing, which blew the bubble bigger and allowed us to borrow even more money. We went from massive liquidity to a liquidity crisis in record time. What were the events that made that unfold?
Well, I mean, I think what happened recently is, you know, you had a situation first where I think many of the lenders who were involved in the subprime space, and, you know, I've been speaking at conferences, Western Region Mortgage Back and Bankers Association the last couple of years, and I've been warning that the industry was in danger of going away, that it just didn't make any sense that people would loan money to individuals without the individual having the ability to repay the loan. That was just kind of an insane business model that was only made possible temporarily by what was going on in Wall Street. But when you started to see a few of these subprime lenders going out of business because of the problems in the secondary market, people didn't want to buy their loans anymore because they could see the defaults increasing. They can see the inventory of unsold homes building, and you began to see the secondary market kind of dry up, and you started to see some of these lenders go out of business. That was the first shoe to drop, and that was probably back around February when my book came out, about a week after my book came out. That was the beginning of it. But more recently, what happened is, over at Bear Stearns, I had a few hedge funds that were heavily invested in some of these mortgage backs. And what happened was some of the shareholders wanted their money back. You know, they had made good gains in the previous year, and they wanted their money back. And when the Bear Stearns hedge funds went to sell these assets, they couldn't find any buyers. And then what this did is forced Wall Street in a way to start to recognize the fact that a lot of these securities that were backed by subprime mortgages were not worth what everybody was pretending that they were worth. And that realization is what sent shockwaves throughout the lending institutions, as these assets that had been, you know, collateralizing a lot of borrowing, all of a sudden their real values were suspect. And a lot of people that held them needed to come up with additional collateral because a lot of the funds, or the hedge funds in particular, own these assets with a lot of leverage. And that's what's creating the problem, because as people are looking to raise collateral, they're being forced to sell things. And as people are selling things, more people are starting to realize that these loans are not worth, you know, what the lenders believe.
Well,
and you're starting to see, you know, the lending community now is starting to get wise to this. And the secondary market, as I predicted years ago, is drying up. And what's happening is lenders, the people who have been buying all this mortgage paper, now don't want to buy it unless, you know, more stringent lending standards are in play. You know, such as the person borrowing the money can prove through documentation of their income and assets that they have the wherewithal to pay it back. They want to make sure that the buyers have some skin in the game, that they're putting down payments, they're not buying with nothing down. The people that used to finance, you know, these second mortgages, you know, there's no demand for those whatsoever. I mean, people realize that, you know, with home prices still as high as they are, Yet with the inventories at levels they are and the foreclosures that are coming down the pike, nobody wants to loan money at these types of valuations.
Absolutely. What caused a pile of subprime loans that basically had 100% financing with somebody that really didn't qualify? What caused that to get a AAA rating?
Well, the way that happened, I mean, look, I had some of my clients short these things, and the fund that I put them in is up about 400% on the year, because even as late as January of this year when we were shorting these bonds, they were still at par. But basically what Wall Street did, and this is what made possible the whole subprime industry. Without this, it never would have happened. What Wall Street was doing is buying up all these subprime bonds and putting them into collateralized mortgage obligations of, let's say, $1 billion face value. And then they would break them up into tranches, and they would assign each tranche a certain percentage of any kind of losses that would occur due to defaults or failure to pay. And so by assigning the losses to the riskier tranches, they were able to therefore protect the so-called safer tranches from risk. And what ended up happening is something like 65% of the subprime bonds, 70% maybe, ended up getting a AAA rating, credit rating. And because they were supposedly insulated from losses due to these other tranches. And the riskiest tranche, called the equity tranche, the riskiest tranche was the one that was rated BBB-. But even that was unjustified. I mean, BBB- still is an investment grade bond.
But when you put all those BBB- together, somehow they created another AAA.
Well, then what they did, right? This was they add insult and injury. They went around, they went ahead and took all those BBB- and then they put them into a pool, and then they created, you know, AAA rated, you know, tranches of those, which was, you know, was ridiculous. I mean, I was laughing at them when I found out about it. And even the first ones, the BBB-. When I first heard about them, my reaction was, this is ridiculous. These things they're never going to pay off. Basically, the assumption behind the BBB- tranche was that, you know, there would be no more than about 4 cents lost on the dollar through the subprime due to default. And my guesstimate was at least 50 cents on the dollar is going to be lost in the subprime bonds, maybe even 60 or 70 cents. I mean, I think when they foreclose on a lot of these properties, they'll be lucky to get 40 cents on the dollar when they sell these things. But the market is drying up, but that's what made it possible, because Wall Street was able to package these loans up. That's why the originators were out there. That's why people could borrow money with nothing down. That's why they can lie about their incomes. You know, it was all because of the secondary market for this paper that Wall Street was making a fortune selling. But now that the buyers of that paper are realized that they've made big mistakes, they're going to lose a lot of money, it's gone. The game is gone. You know, and this is what has, you know, tremendous ramifications for California, because all that easy money is gone. And without that easy money, the only reason that real estate prices rose the way they did in California is because of that easy money, because of those lax lending standards. That's why home prices doubled and tripled in some areas. Now that we're going to have traditional lending standards again, we're going to have traditional prices, which means real estate prices in California at a minimum are going to fall by 50%. And I mean, and what that's going to do to the California economy, that's what's going to make this thing so much worse. That's why prices could fall a lot more than that, and prices could get very, very cheap by historic standards, not just go back to normal, because the economy is going to be decimated when all this home equity is gone. And Californians are struggling to pay adjustable rate mortgages that they took out a few years ago when the mortgage payments go up by 50 or 100%, and the homes that they own are now worth substantially less than the money they borrowed.
Well, I thought the Fed solved this all by pumping some liquidity into the system a couple days ago.
No, the Fed didn't solve anything. All the Fed is doing is trying to buy a little time. I mean, they created this mess by putting too much liquidity in the first place back in, you know, when the NASDAQ bubble burst, which was just a warm-up. I mean, this is the main event, the housing bubble. But it's going to be so much worse on the California economy because so many jobs in California are specifically tied to the mortgage industry, to the housing industry, to all the remodeling that's been done, all the people adding, you know, new kitchens and new bathrooms and building swimming pools and putting in media rooms and people buying new furniture and doing all kinds of stuff, appliances and big screen TVs. I mean, all these jobs that are selling these items are all related to the housing wealth, home equity extractions, the reliance on adjustable rate mortgages to keep your cash flow available for other purchases. All this is coming to an end.
What you're really saying is the consumer is really in for a downturn in spending, which really does affect the economy.
a substantial downturn, not just a little downturn. I mean, it's going to be a collapse. I mean, consumer spending is going to fall off the edge of a cliff. Now, we're going to go through a serious recession. Now, but the reality is the recession is actually a welcome event. It's something that we need to embrace because this is the cleansing process. You know, this is we need to get back to a viable economy. That's what a lot of people don't understand, is that a real viable economy gets its growth through savings and through investment, not the opposite, not through borrowing and consumption. And so we need to return to a viable economy. We can't just import all the products we consume from the rest of the world and issue IOUs. We need to produce stuff. We need to export products to pay for our imported products. And so this is going to require a lot of sacrifice on the part of a lot of Americans.
Okay. Who are the designated bag holders for these mortgage securities? I mean, is it...
Well, whoever owns them, I mean, we stuck a lot of foreigners with these things. I mean, that's why you're reading about losses in Europe and Asia and Australia, you know, because we've been flooding the world with these mortgage-backed securities. They've been our biggest export. You know, that's what people have been investing all their trade surpluses in. And, you know, and so the losses are going to be widespread, but what's going to happen is, you know, people aren't going to line up again to loan Americans money. I mean, that's, you know, when I listen to all these analysts talking about the fact that, oh, the fundamentals are still sound, you know, people shouldn't panic. The fundamentals have never been sound. That's the problem. And these people who are pointing to our, you know, low unemployment rate and our GDP growth don't understand that those are strictly functions of our ability to borrow money from foreigners to consume. And we're not going to be able to do that anymore. That's coming to an end. You know, credit is tightening, interest rates are going to be rising, and not only that, but as the dollar finally collapses, the dollar has been getting some support recently from some of these unwinding of some of these carry trades with the yen and other Asian currencies, but that's just noise right now. Ultimately, what's happening right now is very negative for the value of our currency, and when the dollar really cracks through the floor, not only are Americans going to be struggling with higher interest rates on their mortgages, but the price of commodities like food and energy are just going to go through the roof. I mean, if you think gasoline is expensive now, or milk is expensive now, or, you know, just wait a year. I mean, they could be double the price they are now. And it's going to just make it that much more difficult for people to make their mortgage payments.
Oh, it's compounded by the problem that the lenders do have to tighten their standards now. And so now
they have to tighten them dramatically. I mean, for one reason, because they've lost a lot of money. I mean, see, a lot of the money that was lent to Californians to buy real estate, that money is gone because the houses that were purchased are actually worth half of the price that was paid. So if a lender in Japan, you know, lent a someone in California $1 million to buy a condo, and the reality is that condo is now only worth $500,000, that money is gone. I mean, the lender can't get it back.
Well, the prices are descending. I mean, honestly, we follow that market very carefully. Now, at the moment, we don't really know where the prices are going to settle because they are dropping very quickly and there's not enough comps. What's interesting?
Well, the price of a house in California is very similar to the value of a mortgage-backed security that was in that Bear Stearns hedge fund. I mean, the reason that people living in California can pretend that their houses are worth what they paid for them is because they don't actually have to sell them. You know, they can just market to market, just like they did in these hedge funds. And marking to market is just, you just guess, and you say, well, this is what I think it's worth based on some formula. So somebody in California or some real estate appraiser can say, yes, this condo is worth $1 million, you know, based on the fact that a year and a half ago somebody sold his for $1 million, or, you know, based on whatever. But the reality is, if you have to sell your house and you have to get rid of it, you're not going to get anywhere near the value of the last couple of years. I mean, you'd be lucky if you had to sell your house in a week, you know, in Orange County or San Diego or the Bay Area, and if you had to sell in a week and put on the market, you'd be lucky to get 30% less than last year's prices. I mean, you'd be lucky. You know, the thing is, yes, if you put your house on the market and just let it sit, and maybe somebody buys it, then it's like winning the lottery. There are still some houses selling, but very few as a percentage of the houses that are on the market. Because the people who are buying still they're not clued in to the fact that if they just waited a little while, they'd be able to buy these houses much cheaper. Now, what's going to help them along, actually, is going to be the lenders tightening up on lending standards. Because if people can't borrow money, even if they're dumb enough to want to buy a house, they can't do it. You know, even if they're dumb enough to pay the price that somebody is asking, the lenders are not going to be willing to lend. And that's going to force the discipline and bring down the prices.
Let me ask you about the foreign country real estate market. A lot of countries really exploded in price. Did they have similar lending practices?
They are. I mean, there are similar lending practices, although nothing. I don't think any of the countries are quite as bad as the United States. But there are some problems in the UK and Australia and, you know, New Zealand and other parts of the world. But I think the United States is a little bit unique in the respect or the extent to which our entire economy is dependent on the housing bubble and how much of our GDP is related to consumption. So I think we're going to have a particularly hard landing relative to some of the other economies which have, you know, housing bubbles as well, or overvalued, or, you know, residential real estate market.
Do you see that Freddie and Fannie are going to be able to come to the rescue in any substantial way?
I think Freddie and Fannie are going to have to be rescued themselves. I think they're going to go bankrupt.
I think,
you know, they're talking about trying to buy even more mortgages. They don't have nearly enough capital to withstand the losses that are going to be in their mortgages as well. Because even though they've been buying conforming loans, right, the problem is that a lot of people who borrowed money are just not going to be able to repay. Anybody who bought a house, I think, in the last 4 or 5 years, you know, certainly if they have an adjustable rate mortgage, I don't care if they were, you know, a top credit quality, if they put a down payment, if they had, you know, they had a great FICO score, they're not going to be able to make their mortgage payments at the reset. And even a lot of people that have fixed rate mortgages, they're just simply not going to be able to afford to make their payments because they're going to, a lot of them are going to be unemployed. And, you know, the economy is just going to be so weak. And then, of course, you know, as real estate prices start to fall, even people who committed to buying homes, they might have committed to a mortgage that was 40%, 50%, 60% of their income because they believed that there was a payoff, that that sacrifice would be rewarded with appreciation. And so, therefore, they were willing to overextend themselves because they saw this big payday as a result. But once people see that their homes are actually worth less than they paid, and the likelihood is that in a few years they'll be worth even less, you know, the incentive to stay in a home that you really can't afford, you know, really goes away. And, you know, more and more people are just going to be walking from their houses, particularly when it comes to second homes, you know, or places that were bought as investment properties, but that actually produce negative cash flows. I mean, a lot of people in California bought second homes and third homes, and they did it as an investment, even though the investment properties produced negative cash flows. And the reason they were willing to suffer through those negative cash flows was because they were betting on appreciation, which, of course, made no sense, because if an asset was throwing off a negative cash flow, why would it appreciate? But, you know, all that common sense went out the window in the housing mania. But, you know, people are going to be less reluctant to make the mortgage payment on a negative equity property when the price is falling.
Absolutely. They're not going to make that investment. There's no way. Now, we were told by Bernanke that the problem would be contained within subprime. We've now blown through Alt-A lender American closing, and now you believe that the prime mortgage.
They're all in jeopardy. Anybody that took out an ARM, I mean, think about it this way. I mean, why would somebody, you know, in 2004, 2003, 2005, why would someone have taken out an ARM when fixed-rate mortgages were at all-time record lows? You know, the only reason was they couldn't afford the fixed rate. They needed the ARM to be able to afford the property. And so as the interest rates are rising, they're rising to the level where they are not affordable to the borrower. And plus, you remember, a lot of these mortgages also involve interest-only or negative AM, where they haven't even been making any principal payments. And at some point, these mortgages reset, and they become much more expensive because then the loans actually have to be paid back. You know, when you're paying just interest only, you're not paying back anything. And of course, when you're doing a negative amortization, you're actually the amount that you owe is actually increasing every year.
Do you see a comeback of a program like an FHA, where you have a fixed loan and you have a government-backed loan? Do you see that making a comeback?
Well, I mean, I think in the near term, you know, what's going to happen is credit is going to dry up. I mean, people are going to have cash if they want to buy a house. It's not going to be credit going into the real estate market. And, you know, what's ultimately going to help bring housing affordability back is going to be very cheap houses. I mean, prices are going to collapse, and that will make them affordable, assuming that people can save up a down payment. You know, we've got a long way to go on the downside for prices.
I agree with that. Do we have a bigger problem on the coast where the prices exploded as opposed to,
obviously the places that are going to have the biggest problems are going to be the places where prices of houses rose the most, where you have the most speculation in home ownership. I talk about speculating. I mean, you don't have to be, buy an investment property to be a speculator. I mean, a lot of people in California deliberately bought homes that they knew they couldn't afford, but they expected to either sell or refinance them in a few years before the mortgages reset. And even though they were living in those properties, they were still real estate speculators, because the only reason they were buying a house was because they thought the price would go up. They weren't buying it because they needed the shelter or it made sense financially. It didn't. It only made sense to the extent that the price went up. So you had unprecedented speculation. So the markets that have the highest percentage of, you know, these types of adjustable rate subprime mortgages, where prices went up the most, and where, of course, the economies were, as you know, the most dependent on that bubble, these are the areas of the country where prices will collapse the most. And unfortunately, California, you know, is right at the, you know, in the epicenter of that. I mean, you've got places like Florida, Arizona, Nevada, in the Northeast where I am, in New York, and cities like Boston and Washington, D.C., where you're going to see similar problems.
Usually recessions are really accompanied by very high unemployment. Is that what you see coming as well?
Yeah, I think you're going to have a lot of unemployment. I mean, first of all, I think there's a lot of people right now who aren't working because they thought that being a homeowner was lucrative enough and that they didn't need a job, that they were going to live off the appreciation of their houses. And so I think a lot of those people are going to have to go back into the workforce. I think a lot of people who are unemployed, who are retired right now and who are not looking for work, are going to find that with the higher cost of living and the vanishing in their home equity, they're going to find that they need a job to live if they want to get all the food and energy that they need and pay for medical care, that, you know, their pensions or their investment accounts are just not going to deliver the purchasing power. So I think you're going to see a lot of retirees joining the ranks of the now unemployed, because you have to be looking for work to be counted as unemployed. Then, of course, I think a lot of people in the service sector are going to lose their jobs. I mean, if Americans can't borrow money to spend it anymore, if foreigners aren't going to sell us their products for our paper, you know, there's going to be not as many people going to Walmart or going to Circuit City, and so the people that work in those establishments are going to be out of work. People aren't going to be eating in restaurants. People are going to be cutting back on discretionary spending. People aren't going to be buying new cars as often. People aren't going to be buying all sorts of things that they used to buy. People are going to cut back on things like healthcare, health club memberships, and vacations, and so a lot of people in the service sector are going to lose their jobs. And unfortunately, the bulk of Americans work in the service sector in one way or another. And certainly anybody in the lending area, people working in, home mortgages or in the realtors or appraisers or anybody, related to housing, I mean, they're out of work for sure.
You know, usually recessions are met with interest rate cuts, and you don't think that's going to occur this time?
No, I think interest rates are going to go up, and that's what's going to make the recession particularly severe. I mean, that's the main reason that, Bernanke hasn't already moved to reduce interest rates. I mean, if we ever needed a rate cut from the Fed's perspective, it's now. The reason we're not getting one is because the weakness of the dollar and increasing inflationary pressures are preventing the Fed from doing it. And I think that's those forces are only going to intensify as this housing bubble unwinds. And so, unfortunately, I think that ultimately we're going to have to see much higher interest rates. You know, we're going to be talking about stagflation again, like the 1970s, only we're going to have even more stagnation and even more inflation. It's going to be worse.
How important do you think the world of oil will play a part as far as any chance of embargoes or shortages, that type of thing?
Well, I mean, I have no idea. I mean, if there could certainly be some kind of disruption in the Middle East that would make matters worse. But I think oil prices for Americans are headed a lot higher, even if there are no more hostilities, even if we don't go into Iran. I think as the dollar collapses, see, what that's going to do is bring down the price of oil, particularly, I mean, for foreigners, not Americans, particularly if the Chinese do what, the Bush administration and Congress wants and just really let their currency rise against the dollar. That will cause oil prices to collapse for Chinese citizens, which will mean oil demand in China is going to explode. And when that happens, the dollar price of oil is going to go through the roof. So you can see oil prices at $150, $200 a barrel, which is, triple where they are now, but that could represent a reduction for the Chinese. It all depends on how high their currency goes.
I see.
But all the extra oil that they consume is going to be at the expense of all the oil that the Americans can no longer afford to consume.
Well, Peter, I'm afraid to ask you another question because you have good, long answers. So what are we going to do? We're going to wrap up for this week, and we're going to continue this on our next show. So join us next week, and we'll continue our interview with Peter Schiff.
And what people should do in the meantime is they should try to pick up a copy of my book. If all this stuff is there, I laid it out cold in my real estate chapter, which when I wrote it, it was more of a forecast. Now it's a history lesson. But there's a lot of other predictions in that book that have yet to come true.
Absolutely
true. So people should read them before it happens.
Absolutely true. Crash proof. A very good read. Again, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.